Chapter 4. The sword that slays the king cuts the cords of the empire. Aquilonian proverb. The streets of Tamar swarmed with howling mobs, shaking fists and rusty pikes. It was the hour before dawn of the second day after the Battle of Shamu, and events had occurred so swiftly as to daze the mind. By means known only to Tzothalanti, word had reached Tamar of the king's death within half a dozen hours after the battle. Chaos had resulted. The barons had deserted the royal capital, galloping away to secure their castles against marauding neighbors. The well-knit kingdom Conan had built up seemed tottering on the edge of dissolution, and commoners and merchants trembled at the imminence of a return of the feudalistic regime. The people howled for a king to protect them against their own aristocracy no less than foreign foes. Count Tresero, left by Conan in charge of the city, tried to reassure them. But in their unreasoning terror, they remembered old civil wars and how this same count had besieged Tamar 15 years before. It was shouted in the streets that Tresero had betrayed the king, that he planned to plunder the city. The mercenaries began looting the quarters, dragging forth screaming merchants and terrified women. Tresero swept down on the looters, littered the streets with their corpses, drove them back into their quarter in confusion, and arrested their leaders. Still, the people rushed wildly about with brainless squawks, screaming that the count had incited the riot for his own purposes. Prince Arpello came before the distracted council and announced himself ready to take over the government of the city until a new king could be decided upon, Conan having no son. While they debated, his agents stole subtly among the people, who snatched at a shred of royalty. The council heard the storm outside the palace windows where the multitude roared for Arpello the rescuer. The council surrendered. Tresero at first refused the order to give up his baton of authority, but the people swarmed about him, hissing and howling, hurling stones and offal at his knights. Seeing the futility of a pitched battle in the streets with Arpello's retainers under such conditions, Tresero hurled the baton in his rival's face, hanged the leaders of the mercenaries in the market square as his last official act, and rode out of the southern gate at the head of his 1,500 steel-clad knights. The gates slammed behind him, and Arpello's suave mask fell away to reveal the grim visage of the hungry wolf. With the mercenaries cut to pieces or hiding in their barracks, his were the only soldiers in Tamar. Sitting his war horse in the great square, Arpello proclaimed himself king of Aquilonia amid the clamor of the deluded multitude. Publius the chancellor, who opposed this move, was thrown into prison. The merchants, who had greeted the proclamation of a king with relief, now found with consternation that the new monarch's first act was to levy a staggering tax on them. 6 rich merchants, sent as a delegation of protest, were seized and their heads slashed off without ceremony. A shocked and stunned silence followed this execution. The merchants, confronted by a power they could not control with money, fell on their fat bellies and licked their oppressor's boots. The common people were not perturbed at the fate of the merchants, but they began to murmur when they found that the swaggering Pelian soldiery, pretending to maintain order, were as bad as the Tyrannian bandits. Complaints of extortion, murder, and rape poured into Arpello, who had taken up his quarters in Publius' palace because the desperate counselors, doomed by his order, were holding the royal palace against his soldiers. He had taken possession of the pleasure palace, however, and Conan's girls were dragged to his quarters. The people murmured at the sight of the royal beauties writhing in the brutal hands of the iron-clad retainers. Dark-eyed damsels of Poitain, slim, black-haired wenches from Zamora, Zingara, and Hyrcania, Brethunian girls with tousled yellow heads, all weeping with fright and shame, unused to brutality. Night fell on a city of bewilderment and turmoil, and before midnight, word spread mysteriously up the streets that the Kothians had followed up their victory and were hammering at the walls of Shamar. Somebody in Tsotha's mysterious secret service had babbled. Fear shook the people like an earthquake, and they did not even pause to wonder at the witchcraft by which the news had been so swiftly transmitted. They stormed at Arpello's doors, demanding that he march southward and drive the enemy back over the Tibor. He might have subtly pointed out that his force was not sufficient, that he could not raise an army until the barons recognized his claim to the throne, but he was drunk with power and laughed in their faces. A young student, Athemetes, mounted a column in the market and with burning words accused Arpello of being a cat's paw for Strabonus, painting a vivid picture of existence under Kothian rule, with Arpello as satrap. Before he finished, the multitude was screaming with fear and howling with rage. Arpello sent his soldiers to arrest the youth, but the people caught him up and fled with him, deluging the pursuing retainers with stones and dead cats. A volley of crossbow quarrels routed the mob, and a charge of horsemen littered the market with bodies, but Athemedes was smuggled out of the city to plead with Tresero to retake Tamar and to march to aid Shamar. Athemedes found Tresero breaking his camp outside the walls, ready to march to Poitain in the far southwestern corner of the kingdom. To the youth's urgent pleas, he answered that he had neither the force necessary to storm Tamar, even with the aid of the mob inside, nor to face Strabonus. Besides, avaricious nobles would plunder Poitain behind his back while he was fighting the Carthians. With the king dead, each man must protect his own. He was riding to Poitain, there to defend it as best he could against Arpello and his foreign allies. While Athemedes pleaded with Tresero, the mob still raved in the city with helpless fury. Under the great tower beside the royal palace, the people swirled and milled, screaming their hate at Arpello, who stood on the turrets and laughed down at them while his archers ranged the parapets, bolts drawn and fingers on the triggers of their arbalests. The Prince of Pelia was a broad-built man of medium height, with a dark, stern face. He was an intriguer, but he was also a fighter. Under his silken japon, with its gilt-braided skirts and jagged sleeves, glimmered burnished steel. His long black hair was curled and scented and bound back with a cloth of silver band, but at his hip hung a broadsword, the jeweled hilt of which was worn with battles and campaigns.
"Fools, howl as you will! Conan is dead and Arpello is king!"
What if all Aquilonia were leagued against him? He had men enough to hold the mighty walls until Strabonus came up, but Aquilonia was divided against itself. Already the barons were girding themselves each to seize his neighbor's treasure. Arpello had only the helpless mob to deal with. Strabonus would carve through the loose lines of the warring barons as a galley ram through foam, and until his coming Arpello had only to hold the royal capital.
"Fools! Arpello is king!"
The sun was rising over the eastern towers. Out of the crimson dawn came a flying speck that grew to a bat, then to an eagle. And then all who saw it screamed in amazement, for over the walls of Tamar swooped a shape such as men knew only in half-forgotten legends, and from between its titan wings sprang a human form as it roared over the great tower. Then with a deafening thunder of wings it was gone, and the folk blinked, wondering if they had dreamed, but there on the turret stood a wild barbaric figure, half-naked, blood-stained, brandishing a great sword, and from the multitude rose a roar that rocked the towers.
"The king! It is the king!"
Arpello stood transfixed, and then, with a cry, he drew and leaped at Conan. With a lion-like roar, the Cimmerian parried the whistling blade, then, dropping his own sword, gripped the prince and heaved him high above his head by crotch and neck.
"Take your plots to hell with you!"
he roared, and like a sack of salt he hurled the Prince of Pelia far out, to fall through empty space for 150 feet. The people gave back as the body came hurtling down to smash on the marble pave, splattering blood and brains, and lie crushed in its splintered armor like a mangled beetle. The archers on the tower shrank back, their nerve broken. They fled, and the beleaguered councilmen sallied from the palace and hewed into them with joyous abandon. Pelian knights and men-at-arms sought safety in the streets, and the crowd tore them to pieces. In the streets the fighting milled and eddied, plumed helmets and steel caps tossed among the tousled heads and then vanished. Swords hacked madly in a heaving forest of pikes, and over all rose the roar of the mob, shouts of acclaim mingling with screams of bloodlust and howls of agony. And high above all the naked figure of the king rocked and swayed on the dizzy battlements, mighty arms brandished, roaring with gargantuan laughter that mocked all mobs and princes, even himself.